add something to you, Bill?
Go ahead.
Back when this song came out in 1971, I had no idea that it had anything to do with weed.
Yeah.
I knew every word.
It says one toke over the line, though.
I didn't toke back then.
You didn't, but you knew what that meant, didn't you?
I don't think I did.
All right.
One of the guys who wrote this song, Michael Brewer, on the line with us of Brewer and Shipley fame. Hi, Michael.
Hello, Bill and Wendy.
Michael, you fooled Wendy. She just figured it out today. You fooled her for decades.
Well, I still don't know what it took.
Good for you.
I seriously did not. I was not a pot smoker back then. That was a little before my time. And I didn't know what a toke was. And it was a nice harmony, lovely song. And, you know, AM radio back then, this is a top 10 hit. Mm-hmm. You heard every song. You knew every word to every song. And I sang along and loved it. And now we're celebrating 45 years of One Toke Over the Line. And is it true that it really kind of happened in the back room at one of your gigs at a coffee house in Kansas City?
Yeah, it really did. We were, it was a little coffee house we'd played numerous times, and we were getting ready to go on for our last set of the evening, and a friend stopped by with a little something-something, and we stepped out back for a minute, and when we came back in, we were in the dressing room tuning up, and Tom said, man, I'm one toke over the line. And I just cracked up. I thought it was hysterical. And right off the top of my head, I started singing, One Toke Over the Line, Sweet Jesus. And the next day, we thought, what was that we were messing with last night? And we turned it into a song in no time, literally just entertaining ourselves and to write something to make our friends laugh. We didn't even take it seriously. And we were traveling the country and doing shows while we were also flying back and forth to San Francisco, recording an album called Tarkio. And one of the shows we did, we opened for Melanie at Carnegie Hall.
Melanie.
I just love.
Yeah, you remember Melanie?
Yeah.
I got a brand new pair of roller skates. You got a brand new key.
Yeah. She had a brand new pair of roller skates at the time, as I recall.
And she hooked up with you with your new weed.
Got multiple encores and basically ran out of songs. So we thought, well, let's do One Toke. And we did. And everybody loved it. And the president of the record company we were with at the time came backstage and said, oh, you got to record that. You got to add that to the album, which kind of surprised us because, like I said, we really didn't even take it seriously. So we said, well, okay. So we recorded it. And next thing you know, they released it as a single, and it's shooting up the charts, and we were in big trouble with the Nixon administration.
Yeah, explain that a little bit. Richard Nixon was not happy with you guys.
Well, it was he had the FCC threatening radio stations at the time with their licenses if they didn't censor so-called drug lyrics in rock and roll, and we thought that was ludicrous to us. It was the equivalent of burning books. And, I mean, Puff the Magic Dragon was on the list. It was just a witch hunt. It was ridiculous. And we did. We made his enemies list, and Vice President Spiro Agnew named us personally on national TV one night as subversives to American youth. You know what? You can't buy that kind of publicity. I think it helped it a lot. You know, I'd like to take this opportunity to apologize to your listening audience for ruining so many young lives.
You ruined the country, Michael. You screwed up the whole country.
Our evil song, man. Yep. We're so sorry.
Michael, my guess is, by what you just said, you wore this as something of a badge of courage to have Richard Nixon and Spiro Agnew upset with you. That's not the worst thing in the world, is it?
No, we despised him. Oh, I despised Richard Nixon. I didn't think I would dislike any president more than Richard Nixon until George W. Bush came along.
Yeah, I get it.
Yeah, politics never ceases to amaze me.
Yeah.
All right, despite the fact that you're in trouble from Nixon, how did this song make it on the Lawrence Welk show as sung by a lovely little couple, Gail and Dale?
I have no idea. I guess because it was just a a popular song at the time. We were in London and didn't even see it. We didn't believe it. It was like, you got to be kidding me. Lawrence Welk didn't play One Toke. But he did. And 36 years later, we finally got our hands on a copy of it and got it on YouTube. I think it's closing in on about 1 million hits now. Have you seen it?
Oh, yeah. We watched it earlier today, and our mouths are still wide open.
Hysterical. And Lawrence Welk at the end, as you noticed, referred to it as a modern spiritual.
How about that?
Because Sweet Jesus is in it.
Yeah, Sweet Jesus and Mary, I guess. So he thought it was a spiritual. Who knows? Well, I know some of the Lennon brothers who are the sons of the Lennon sisters who are, regulars on the Lawrence Welk show. So they grew up on the set. And I asked him one time, I said, did anybody have a clue what they were doing? And he said, oh, I guarantee you some of the guys in the band did. But Lawrence didn't, and Dale and Gale certainly didn't.
Here's a little of Dale and Gale.
One toke over the line, sweet Jesus. One toke over the line. Sitting downtown in a railway station.
Yes, they're doing something else in that railway station than other people are doing, I have a feeling.
That is so milquetoast, and it's got to be the straightest, most ridiculous version of the song anybody's ever done.
So this comes up in a coffee house. You're just goofing around because you guys were one toke over the line. It goes on the Tarkio LP, as your dude from Buddha Records said, put it on the album. But now, was there another song that you would have rather been famous for instead of One Toke Over the Line?
Well, no, not really, because Tom and I have never been singles artists. We've always been album artists. Every song on every album we've ever recorded is just as important as any other song on the album. We've never thought about singles. You know, we've left that up to the record companies. So, no, we didn't have any choice or, you know, anything for singles. Just it was their choice, and we said, okay, if that's what you want to do, go for it. And who would have guessed that not only would, you know, end up being a big hit, even though it was banned at the time, that all these decades later, the darn thing is still played all over the world. It's in movies, it's on TV, it's in books. The phrase itself has become part of the vernacular. I mean, I've seen so many newspaper articles, you know, with the headline, One Toke Over the Line, that didn't even have anything to do with weed. It's just a phrase that people know. Well, here's an example. When the new pope was getting ready to move into the Vatican, but the old pope was going to remain there also, Stephen Colbert did a thing one night. He says, folks, for the first time in 700 years, there are going to be two popes in the Vatican. Does that mean we're one pope over the line? One pope over the line.
Very nice, Michael.
But yeah, well, you know, it's, we never would have guessed. We take no credit. You know, we just wrote a silly little song, and who would have guessed it would turn into what it's turned into?
Sure.
Well, congratulations. That's pretty cool. We're talking to Michael Brewer of Brewer and Shipley fame, who gave us One Toke Over the Line, top 10 hit in 1971. And I want to know if you know where 420 even got its origin.
I've heard various stories.
So have we.
Yeah, and today a friend emailed an article from the Huffington Post, and I believe this is probably closest to the truth. It originated at the San Rafael High School in San Rafael, California. I used to think it was UCLA, but it was actually San Rafael High School. A group of people calling themselves the Waldos because they like to congregate by this particular wall. When they'd get out of school at 4:20 is when they would go out by some wall and burn one, and that's.
But there's more to it, actually. In Huffington Post, these Waldos heard that a Coast Guard service member stationed nearby,
been
tending a secret pot crop that he could no longer take care of.
Yeah, so, and they went looking, and never did find it.
But they still met there every day at 4:20, even though they didn't find the stash, they smoked the stash.
It's too funny.
Some of those kids still show up there every day, Michael. That's the disconcerting part of that story.
Yeah, I know. Well, old habits are hard to break.
Are you guys still playing together?
Oh, yeah.
Good.
We're still kicking it around. We took a little break for a few years in 1980 because we were just fried from being on the road for so many years. And Tom wanted to get into some other things anyway he had interest in. He got into videography, and he got really good at it. He started out making these cool little documentaries about characters in the Ozarks where we live. And one thing led to another, and he ended up having his own department at the University of Missouri of Science and Technology. And they were always sending him off to places like Bolivia and the Amazon, shooting videos for the university. And he's retired from that, but he still puts in a couple of days a week at the university, and he has his independent projects. But yeah, we still tour. We're going back to Alaska next month for a tour we've done about six or seven times, one of our favorites. And talk about times changing. Every show is a fundraiser for state troopers, police, and fire.
Nice.
Every night, you know, I would say, you know, 40 years ago we were afraid of you guys, and now here we are raising money for you. And we have a T-shirt, Brewer and Shipley, More Tokes for Old Folks.
Very nice.
I can't tell you how strange it is selling those things and signing autographs and having our pictures taken with the cops. It's just wrong. There's just something weird about it.
And you're doing some work with your buddy Dan Fogelberg, too. We all remember him.
I did. While Tom and I had gone our separate ways for a while, I was doing some solo shows, and I ran into Dan in Colorado. He was working on his Innocent Age album at the time, and he invited me to sing a duet with him on a beautiful song called The Reach, and I did, and one thing led to another, and he decided he wanted to produce an album on me, which he did. And so old friends like Linda Ronstadt and J.D. Souther contributed to it. Dan played guitar and banjo and sang with me on some things, wrote a song for me, and rest his soul.
Awesome. Do you ever keep in touch with Melanie? Because I have recently taken voice lessons, and I sing a couple of Melanie's tunes, and I probably owe her some royalties.
No, I never have really encountered Melanie other than that one show, and the weirdest thing happened, too. She asked me to tune her guitar for her.
Oh.
Here she is, top of the charts.
Yeah.
Headlining Carnegie Hall and couldn't tune her own guitar. I thought that was a little strange.
Well, now she's doing some work with Miley Cyrus, so maybe something's missing upstairs in her. I don't know.
Is she really?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Oh, my gosh.
You know, it's a big incestual world of rock and roll, so maybe sometime you'll run into her.
A while back, Miley was doing some work with, his name just went right out of my head. I've known him for years. The lead singer in the Flaming Lips, Wayne Coyne.
Oh.
Just doing some work with Wayne Coyne.
And are you... I know, and I love that at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, which, why aren't you guys in there yet?
Well, I don't know. I don't even know how any of that works. We're in the Missouri Music Hall of Fame and the Kansas Music Hall of Fame.
Maybe you guys aren't in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame because you get along with each other. Maybe they don't want that.
That could be it. Yeah, that's very possibly it. Yeah. Well, I don't know. I just got an email today from a longtime friend saying, how come you guys aren't in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame? Don't ask me. I have no idea how any of that works.
Well, we're celebrating 45 years, excuse me, top 10 hit, One Toke Over the Line. And before we let you go, Michael, there's a listener who's been hanging on since before you were even on the line with us. Rick, you saw Brewer and Shipley live in action?
Yes. How you doing, Mike? Mr. Hi. Brewer, I saw you guys. As a matter of fact, you played or you may have emceed. This was back in, I want to say, the 80s. Do you remember... way up in northern Wisconsin, on an Indian reservation, the Great Northern Bluegrass Festival?
I kind of do. There's something about that ringing a bell.
Yeah, it was like a big arena out in the middle of nowhere, and the stage was all wood, and they had all the people would be down in the bowl in the middle, and they had bonfires going and fireworks. It was pretty much anything went up there because it was an Indian reservation. Only federal marshals had jurisdiction on that land, and it was always like a four-day-long festival. It was nuts.
Sounds like fun.
I think you guys emceed it, if I remember.
We may have. You know what? There's something ringing a bell with me about that. But you know what? If it wasn't for acid flashbacks, I'd have no memory at all.
This is so awesome to talk to you, though. I appreciate it. I really love you guys, man. I didn't know you did any work with Dan Fogelberg. I loved that guy, too, back in the day. That was some good music back then, wasn't there?
Yeah, he was a great guy. One more person gone. I'll tell you, we've lost way too many contemporaries recently.
How about it?
The Eagles. No kidding.
It's been a very bad year.
Really bad year. I have an old Polaroid snapshot of Paul Kantner, of course, you know, founding member of the Jefferson Airplane, Jefferson Starship, in the early 60s at an apartment in Venice Beach, California, ironing clothes, wearing a white button-down collar shirt, horn-rimmed glasses, and a flat-top haircut when he was a banjo player in a folk group.
Wow.
That's a pretty cool picture.
It was very few years later that, you know, they were on the top of the charts, the Airplane on top of the charts. And one night backstage at the Fillmore West, he turned me on to my very first tie stick.
Oh, that's great. Happy 420.
Yeah, absolutely.
Michael,
I'll burn one for Paul and for Glenn later today.
So nice to talk to you, sir, and say hi to Tom Shipley for us, will you?
I'll sure do it. It's been a pleasure speaking to you folks, too.
Thank you, Michael. Michael Brewer of Brewer and Shipley explaining a song from nearly a half a century ago. It's
45 years ago and still being played on the radio. And yeah. He was on the Dick Cavett Show Midnight Special. Remember that? And of
course, Bert Sugarman's Midnight Special.
And Don Kirshner's Rock Concert.
Yep.
Love that as well.
Yep. All right. A quick break and then more show for you. It's Bill F. and Wendy Snyder on WGN.